I can't even look at you.
Why not?
Because you started making me laugh right before I hit record. And then I knew the second I look at you, I was going to start laughing.
I feel a little chaotic, Mike.
You're opening
Thanks for asking. I cannot open this kombucha. It's like...
Oh, you okay?
You...
Boy, I would...
You open this? I told you I felt chaotic.
This would be great if this is somebody's very first episode.
This is why we have video.
The very...
I wish
why we don't have video.
Yep. It's that is why won't it? Oh, thank you. I'm so glad you opened
that
for me.
I did.
Good Lord, that was the hardest kombucha ever to open.
Well,
my eyes are watering.
Your eyes are watering. Well, hey.
So I answered your question.
We are back, Underground Espionage, episode 66. How's it going, Tara?
Well, truth be
Still
told,
going
Mike,
good?
I feel a little chaotic right now, but that's okay.
It always happens before recording. You
yeah,
know,
I get just... a little squirrely. I also had some chips. Chips have been my primary nutrition source of late.
Yeah.
I've really been enjoying chips, green tea, and white wine.
Oh, I was going to say, you're talking about kombucha.
It
you know,
cure all.
I do think people do have to get confused by, well, especially your just how you... You go about how you consume things because you will talk kombucha and like, you know, as we used to refer to them, gritty drinks, your
oh,
like health
yes,
drinks.
Yes, I do.
But then it's been established this week that for various reasons, your stomach's been a little out of whack. So chips and McDonald's have been the only thing that have been good.
Yeah. I mean, look, I love.
You never said that we are, you know.
No, I'm not. I'm not trying to be on some moral high horse in terms of food. Look, we run the whole gamut, and yeah. I have something called, like, I had gastroparesis, which is a paralyzed
wow,
stomach.
Wow, we're just going, we're doing it.
Well, we've talked about it before, but occasionally it works, occasionally it doesn't work.
Your stomach.
My stomach.
People who have known yeah, us and Tara for
a, while,
for a
no.
long time know this is...
Like, sometimes I'm fine, and then sometimes I can't...
It kicks back in.
I can't eat food, so, like, but then, I don't understand, I don't get the reason, but, like... I mean, I do know, like, potatoes are simple starches, and so they're very easy to digest. So, generally, when my stomach is really bad, some form of potato product will help me out. Like I existed on mashed potatoes for, like, a year. Instant mashed potatoes.
Back in the day. Well, and I also just think whatever magic chemicals are put into Quarter Pounders also seem to...
And, like, somehow, like, are they pre-digested? I don't know what it is.
Someone eats them up and spits
yeah,
them out.
Yeah, eats them out, spits them back in, and then we're good to go. But, like, for some reason, like, potatoes have always been okay. But even then, like, sometimes, like, the gritty drink, even kombucha, like, it's so high on acid, it hurts my stomach. But, like, the potatoes... tend to do me right, and for some reason a Quarter Pounder has been just okay, and I've been able to hold that down.
Well,
I don't know why.
Wild intro for this one. Yeah. This
well,
really went
I
off the rails
would expect
immediately.
No less. I would expect no less.
Went off the rails immediately. Mm-hmm. Couple things here at the top before we get into the episode. Mm-hmm. Wednesday. That's in like a day and a half as this is going to be released.
Do you know
the second
date
after
of
we're
day?
Done. Of course, September 9th.
Oh, you know. You know.
Wednesday, September 9th.
How is it September 9th?
Over at Whammy, we will be hosting Michael W. Johnson's Possessed by Evil as part of the Shot on Video September. And thanks to Ross of Saturn's Core for having us do that. There's a bunch of Saturn's Core stuff being screened throughout the month. In fact, last night, not Saturn's Core, but Saturn's Core related, mm-hmm. we went to the screening of Tina Krause's Limbo.
It was a blast.
It was a lot of fun. Afterwards, mm-hmm. there was a Q&A, a Zoom Q&A with Tina, and it was a lot of fun and saw some friends there and had a really nice time. But this Wednesday, it's going to be a little different vibe. All right.
It's gonna be a little different vibe.
We got yeah. Michael W. Johnson. So, yeah. you know, let's just say some of the talking points of the Q&A will not be talking points of the Michael W. Johnson screening.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But we are incredibly excited because it has been announced that the Possessed by Evil Blu-ray has been released. And we were fortunate enough to be asked to do commentary for the movie. So We did, it's our second commentary for a Saturn's Core Disc, and that was a fun one. And I'm so glad again Ross asked us, and we had a total blast. And it's a double feature. Comes with Dying to Meet You, another Michael W. Johnson movie. So pick that up. It's the September release of Saturn's Core. And yeah, I mean, it'll be kind of like when we did the Pamela Such movie. I feel like at this point, we'll have seen Possessed by Evil, you know, more than most people, yeah, because we watched it multiple times. Yeah. And then, you know, I'm sure we'll throw it on again just to get our bearings about, you know, how we're going to introduce it.
Yeah. At least a half a dozen times.
Yeah.
We'll have seen it by then.
Yeah.
So.
And then even that comment, you know, we talked about how the Pamela Such commentary was a stop and start. That one, I think there was only one stop because it like the file stopped, like, and it wasn't too far in, so we were able
to just
kick it back.
We just started over one time. But yeah, doing that was the weird thing about doing commentary that we hadn't considered is like, we just tried to do it all in one go, so we didn't we almost had to. I'm like,
well, we did.
Yeah. So the Pamela Such, I think we did it like four times, three times?
More, I think more than that, but the...
It was great. Became very... Talk about feeling squirrely.
The Pamela Such movie was only like 50 minutes, but Possessed by Evil is a 90-minute movie.
Yeah.
So we did, you know, full 90 minutes, no edits from start to finish, because we just don't have the technical wherewithal to like pause.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, people can do it. Like, I'm sure it could be done.
And even just the way we do it is, you know, we get the file, so we do it on like a computer. We have
multiple
computers
like
as opposed
laptops.
To like putting on a disc or whatever.
Yeah.
So with computers, there's always the chance of a file like just stuttering or whatever. But
it's making me itchy thinking about it.
Well, we did it.
Move on. We did it. Thank God.
We did it and had a blast, and you know, hope to get a chance to do some more commentaries because it's so much fun for us. And of course, I mean, I just saw Whammy posted a little the preview for Possessed by Evil, and just seeing the boys in their trench coats walking with the Typo Negative song. Certainly
it's fine.
Actually in the movie Concrete Blonde, Bloodletting is in the movie, and it's in the credits, like they obviously did actually get it's listed like courtesy of IRS Records, which is amazing because of course Concrete Blonde, Bloodletting is one of Tara's all-time favorite albums. It's one of those albums that you introduced me to. I didn't know about it until you.
Yeah, it's like,
I mean, I knew about it, but
it was
one
of my favorite albums to like shut myself in my room to, like, you know, put on like a Bath and Body Works candle, shut myself in my room, you know, clean, cry, draw things.
It's a great
whatever,
album. I mean,
whatever I needed to do.
It's a great album. I'm not sure if we're playing anything off that tonight or some of the early stuff tonight, but tonight, if you're listening to this, the second this comes out, if you're listening to it, you just every day, because we have no set schedule, so, you know, you're just refreshing. When? Get that new UE?
Oh, God.
We will be at Mermaid tonight and start time at 9 instead of 8. There's a horror trivia at 8. Hey, nothing, we're not a part of that, but hey, come on out for that. And then if you're there for that,
we should
around.
Play. We'll clean up.
If they're going to ask us about, you know,
old
Michael
horror, they're
w.
probably
Johnson.
Talking about like new.
Well, hey, we'll new look. Horror. Look, we'll see. We'll see. But we're doing that. And then I want to, a little bit out. We'll mention it, of course, as it gets closer, but we did want to mention a screening in October in Philadelphia for any listeners out there, the Philadelphia MoCA. October 12th, Bloodsick is presenting Debbie Does Damnation, which is exciting, but even more exciting for us because he's our brother, our longtime brother, going to be opening with a short from Matt Minter, Intimate Bodies. So he'll be there. So we're excited that he's getting his shorts out there. He's been, Bloodsick's been having him on things. I know he's got something coming up in, I think, November out here for a all-day screening of different shorts out here. Gray actually hipped us to that. Mm. So really exciting to see his work getting out there more and more. And just, we've seen it. It's so cool. And we've seen the progression, which is just so cool, too.
Yes.
You know? So that's October 12th. We'll, of course, mention it again as it gets closer. But, yeah, the Philadelphia crew, you know, the Bloodsick crew really really doing some cool stuff out there. You know, a movie that we've mentioned and are excited about, Toxic Moon, is playing. I believe it's the weekend before that. I believe it's in October, but I do believe that's sold out.
We need to go to Pennsylvania soon.
I mean, we've been definitely been hit up from some friends out there for sure. So, hey, we'll see. I mean, look.
We had a weird summer.
I mean, look, everyone, anyone listening knows this has been the strangest summer in memory for us.
I can drive again, everybody. Announcement.
Yeah,
I found out yesterday that I actually can drive now. So I'm going to be menacing the roads ways of Hollywood again.
That's right. So, you know, it's strange. It's so strange to just kind of forget, because you can, you know, you still get sore and stuff, but I doesn't, when even you'll say like, hey, look, I walked those stairs, like for a second, I almost
went
forget
down the stairs
because you're doing so
by myself, like, because
you're doing
like
so good.
Normal.
I know that I almost like it's hard to explain.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
what
don't
the
worry.
Is.
I'm still in constant pain.
Okay.
So that
don't
is
worry.
The thing. Like,
oh, I don't like
well,
that.
I mean, whatever. It's not the same level of pain. It's more like a 4, you know what I mean? And not like a 7, but like, it's strange because I do forget what I can do and what I can, and I'll think I can do something and I can't quite do it, or I just walk up and down the stairs like easily and I'm like, oh shit, I just did that. So I don't know, but truly the only consistent thing is it's, you know, always painful. But other than that, like, I'm doing great. I mean, who cares, right?
I mean, I care.
Thank you.
I think the listeners care. Everyone has reached out to you.
It doesn't
all
matter
summer.
As long as I don't bitch about it. You know, that's the fun thing about pain.
Well, you know what? There you go. That's a good. Look, we teach you life lessons out here. It's the duality of humanity. We'll drink kombucha and eat quarter pounders.
I mean, you gotta have
you
a way
about,
to digest those quarter
we will
pounders.
Teach you how to handle pain, aka don't bitch about it, as Tara says.
and then like digestive enzymes help a lot too. We need to go get Digest Gold is my favorite digestive enzyme. Mike, they're on sale. We're gonna get some tomorrow after physical therapy. I'm just telling you right now.
Hey, look at that.
God, we have plans. So many things that I had been wanting to talk about, but then we did an interview and I didn't want to like,
well, our last episode,
know,
our interview with
Richard's time
was
by
such
discussing
a
something.
Great discussion. We obviously could have gone for hours, of, you know, with the time there, so much, it was late for him, so we don't want to keep him too long. But Richard's great, and just a total blast.
Yeah, that was so great talking to him.
Yeah, and definitely a great new friend out in the UK. So that's cool. It's been so long since we've been there. He was saying, you know, oh, it'd be cool if you guys came over. I'm like,
yeah, I'd love it. Sounds great.
When was the? I guess I was there in 2010, and I guess for you it was probably 2006.
It was like all tomorrow's parties.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
But, you know, our next trip obviously is Japan in April.
Yes.
We got that coming up. I'm so excited.
I know. I got to get ready for that. Don't even talk about it. A new thing for me to have anxiety.
I won't. But I'll tell you what we are excited about is to talk about today's movie, Mudhoney. You know, we're gonna get to Tara stuff. Don't worry. I'm just setting it up.
No,
Tara,
yeah.
You know, of course, we talked about Russ Meyer with Richard Baylor, and it is how he and I really connected on one of our episodes. He wrote that he had listened, and we just started talking about Russ Meyer, and so Mudhoney just felt like a great follow up to that episode, and just felt like a great vibe for just, I don't know, the just where we're at right now.
Yeah, and when we threw it on, I didn't realize, I don't know if you did, like how perfect the tone was for just like a hot, unfair, suffering summer. For a suffering summer.
Exactly.
It's just so satisfying.
Yeah.
In terms of just if you're feeling, if you're feeling fraught with despair, if you feel like things happen and you wish they hadn't and they were unfair, if you're feeling dusty, if you're feeling hot, if you're feeling impoverished, all of those things hit so hard in Mudhoney.
End of suffering summer. So that is our main feature today. But Tara, I know you have stuff you would like to discuss with me and
I do. They sound the so trivial now. There were so many awesome news stories I want to discuss. So maybe I'll just blast right through them. I'm just gonna blast them all over the place. That one thing that I was thinking about, Mike, it's a really important thought. You know, sometimes you ask me, what are you thinking about? And what I've been thinking about is, like bananas are divas, like of all the fruits, right? Stone fruit, divas, bananas. But I feel like bananas are also like liars about like the ripeness level, what's going on inside of them. They don't communicate well what's going on inside bananas. Poor communicators. Who buys a bunch of bananas other than people that are like making smoothies? You said people with kids, right?
Yes, we did have this discussion.
I'm saying you have to be the most like relaxed. You just hear me out. Okay, you have to be the most like chilled out, relaxed, unpicky person if you're buying yourself a bunch of bananas, because like I know I, Mike, have the perfect spot where I want to eat a banana, and that is when there's almost no green and a few brown spots. But if there's too many brown spots, I'm not going to touch it, and if it's too much green, I'm going to take one bite and throw it away. You, Mike, on the other hand, prefer green.
Well, you know, I'll say
you like that sour
phase. You kind of knocked that out of me, though. And I don't. Have you seen me eat a green?
No, and it's like.
You kind of knocked that out of me.
So we have this, like, 4-hour window where we can eat the banana, right? Because, like, you eat even too late in the day and it's gone. You know what I mean? So, like, when you have a bunch, is it that, like, you just kind of wait for it to happen and then you pick, like, because, you know, they're all kind of ripen at similar times, but maybe not the exact time. So do you just like house a bundle in one day? Or are you like 6 a.m. bananas ready, noon, next bananas ready, then two more are ready and you're like, fuck, what am I going to do? You can't put them in the fridge or something. Like, do you peel them? You freeze them? Do you like make a smoothie? Like, it, I just feel like you're at their mercy at all times, unless you're just cool with wasting bananas. But I think that's the other option, is just like you buy a bunch just thinking like, I'm gonna throw three of these fuckers away. You know what I mean? Like, and then like people are like, well, you can make banana bread. You can make, like, who, how much banana bread is anybody? I don't need banana bread. I'm an adult. How much banana bread do I need in my life?
Sounds good right now.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not gonna, yeah, it does, but I mean, I'm not gonna make banana bread.
No,
right now.
No,
I have to have
no.
All kinds of things. I have to, like, flour and eggs.
It's a whole
I don't
thing.
Keep any of that stuff around because I know how to bake, and then I will bake a shit that we don't need.
That is
so
true.
I know. So I can't even keep flour in the house because I will at some point be like, I'm gonna bake something, you know? So I digress. I just, do you, anybody, listeners, do you buy bunches of bananas? How do you eat them? Are you just a total chill person who's like, fuck it, I'll eat a green one, I'll eat a brown one, I'll eat one with little spots on it, I'll eat it with no spots on it. Like, what is it? I don't know. Mike, do you have any thoughts?
Well, I mean, you've gotten me, I only eat it when you're ready. I sort of go with you now.
I buy two maximum bananas.
There's two of us.
And then I look at them and I buy one peach because two is too many.
I feel like peaches are more, you know, the window is because it hits and then
no,
it goes away.
No, peaches, it's like a matter of hours. I have to really keep a close eye on them. You know what I mean? Because like you get them too hard and it's no fun and you don't want to fucking eat them. Like you could heat them up in your oatmeal and they get a little better, but they're still like not fun. But you get them too mushy, also no fun. So you really got a tight window on peaches. You can't be like buying four peaches. See people buy a bundle of peaches. I'm like, the fuck are you doing? You're making a pie? And then like you have to make the pie at the right time. Anyway. Just saying. Then the other things that I was excited about. I mean, it's just kind of like sometimes I get excited about things that happen where I'm like, we would not be involved in this. We're not going to be involved in
cruise ships going down.
You know,
people falling off cliffs,
cave diving, yeah. Expeditions, yeah. like things of that nature where I'm like, yeah, no. No, we wouldn't. I don't know. We need a name for like a segment where it's like we wouldn't be involved in this or more things that, you know, I think I wrote down a few names. The reinforcement station where we just reinforce our own feelings
like we won't
about
be doing that, yeah.
Not doing it. More reasons why we don't. Things that will never happen. Some lemurs died and they did necropsy? Like, apparently you don't say autopsy on animals. You say necropsy. Like, I didn't know that. But you don't say autopsy on an animal. But, and guess what, Mike? Some lemurs had sores in their throat and their brains swelled and they died. And when they went to figure out why, it was because of animal yoga. Like, you know, when people go to those.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Okay, no, no, I don't.
Yes,
so...
okay. So people do these, like, yoga with goats. Or like
what?
Yoga. This is a San Diego place that is yoga with lemurs. And like you go and they do it like in other countries and stuff. And like you have a yoga class. Have you not seen goat yoga?
No,
don't know about goat yoga.
You could be making this up.
Do like a downward facing dog and then the goat climbs up on your back and everybody thinks it's hilarious. And then they take pictures of each other with like goat, little baby goats, mini goats standing on them and stuff. You wouldn't do it with a full size goat because it would hurt like hell if they stood on you. But little baby goats, fine. Pygmy goats, you know, but like this is yoga with lemurs. So when you're doing yoga, the lemurs are running around. Well, apparently lemurs are really susceptible to herpes in humans. And so the poor lemurs, which I feel really bad for, got herpes from all the people they were doing yoga with.
Okay.
I know, right?
I need you to,
but
to set the scene for me.
I thought the same thing. Set the scene. So this yoga, when you say yoga, do you mean like yoga?
Yeah, yeah. Are we getting in trouble like, for even talking private? About this? Yeah.
No, it's like the things that give you cold sores, like that are present in your faces. So like breathing on it, you can transmit herpes like through close contact, aerosolized saliva and things of that nature. So,
some nasty herpes shit.
So, some people had some open herpetic sores and they decided
they're doing yoga.
That it was a great day to do yoga with a bunch of lemurs. And then the lemurs died. Isn't that sad? But then this led me on a thing of looking up like more herpes. Like, did you know also that like pigeons carry a specific pigeon herpes, but humans don't get it? But in like another like thing, you know how much I love pigeons. I mean, and
it doesn't matter.
Yet another thing I love about pigeons is that, but they can't give the herpes to humans. So don't worry, Mike. And then too, so I can hug all the pigeons I want, but they will give them to birds of prey. So like if a bird tries to eat them and they like reach up and they give them herpes. It's fun. Fun facts. Anyway, anybody, you can all read more about it.
Fun facts, Tara.
Okay, and
how many lemurs
are
there? Like
a couple.
A lot, just like a couple. Yeah,
like two. But that's a lot of lemurs. I mean, I feel bad. Little ringtail lemurs, little weirdos.
Getting herpes.
Getting fucking herpes.
Like they're
terrible.
Like
way
they're
to
in
go.
Like a
brain swelling up.
Evil angel. Like
hate it. Oh,
scene.
Poor kids. I know. Poor kids. I feel bad for them, but yes. So you know what I mean? Maybe, you know, we should all like not. Like, do yoga on your own. Like, I don't want anybody around if I'm doing yoga.
Don't bang lemurs if you got herpes.
Don't spit on lemurs and be around. Don't wear a mask. Anyway, what for the lemurs benefit for your herpes?
Mask up.
Well, for your herpes. Okay, and then a roller coaster at Six Flags got shut down after two more riders suffered traumatic brain injuries. You know how we feel. We're too old for roller coasters.
Yeah. The more you see, like, I feel like every year there's more and more roller coaster horror stories, or maybe they just come out. I don't know.
But we're always, like, talking about the ones that get stuck, but this is the Magic Mountain X2 roller coaster, and it's some people, because it has, like, a headrest, and basically they their heads get bonked around so much that it knocks them unconscious.
It's crazy to me to think that, like, I mean, I went on tons of roller coasters as a kid.
I know.
I loved it. It's the thought of it. There's
the thought of going on a roller coaster as an adult is like, no.
I don't know what. And I'm talking like, would I go on I wouldn't do like a
Gravitron.
Like no.
Would you go on a Gravitron?
No.
I don't think I would. I don't even want to go on one of those Viking ships that swing
back
and
forth.
See,
that's what I was about to say. I'm like, would I do that? I'm like, right now.
So. Would you go on the Scrambler?
Why, though?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't need that thrill.
At the same time,
I don't require that thrill.
I mean,
anymore.
I guess, though, so I guess it wasn't that long ago we did Universal Studios. And we did do the Harry Potter thing where Well, our handicap on that one, I don't know if we told the story, ever told the story.
I don't know. Let's do it. It's fun.
If we've told this on the podcast, this is one of our bits. You know, we have limited bits, everybody.
Yeah, it's only
so if we've told it, go ahead and just click fast forward. I don't think we have, but my mom came to visit one time and she wanted to go to Universal Studios because that was like our favorite growing up.
Yeah.
Because the rides were like fun, but they weren't. They weren't loop-de-loop. They were
fun, but not too fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know.
No, they're not. Yes.
But, you know, we were all obviously just a little older. But what's great about Universal is that you can drink. You can get a beer and you can walk around and drink.
Yeah. We don't. Look, no offense, everybody. We have no interest in Disney. I don't want to go. I don't care about it. But Universal's fun as hell.
So we. We find out you can drink. We get there, you know, whatever, pretty early. You know, most people are like, oh, you're going to already have a drink. Tara and I beeline, and we both get two tall boys, a Heineken.
They weren't normal tall boys. They were like the 24-ouncers, like the big, the really fat ones, like a Foster's can fat, but tall.
And so we assume that the lines will be really long, so we'll be able to drink it while we're in line, because that's what I remember as a kid.
Yeah, so we got them thinking, like, we're going to be in line forever. Let's grab a couple beers and stand in line, and then it'll be fun.
Instead, there was almost no line from the Harry Potter ride, so we need to slam these. Quote, unquote, we need to slam these.
So you have me and Mike with Mike's mom standing next to a trash can at the entrance of Harry Potter World, chugging Heineken's
at 11:30.
Like 11:30 in the morning. And then, you know, I've just referenced my stomach thing. So, like, you can't
Okay.
Look, you felt it too, but you can't fill my stomach too full. It's like, you know, the doctors, they use this analogy, and I think it's apt, and that is like, picture a water balloon and you fill it up, but you're not holding the top of it. You know, that's kind of like my stomach. It's like, you can pinch the top of your stomach. You may be like uncomfortable. You may not be, but like stuff stays in. Mine's like, you can't pinch the top. So it just comes right out. It's not like throwing up. It just like comes out, you know? So that's what I'm going.
So we get on the ride, and it's one of those where it's like not a roller coaster, but it moves on a track, and it's like crazy screens, but also stuff like comes out of you.
But you got dangly feet, and I thought it was gonna be like E.T. or Peter Pan, where you're kind of floating around and looking at stuff.
No,
like I thought it was gonna be like it's a small world where you're just like, wow,
that's
so
what
pretty.
I thought. No, this thing whips you around, so immediately
spin
Tara
Juba.
Holding our mouth shut, being like,
I look in the car ahead of us, and I see this man's like feet fly up in the air, and all this change comes out of his pockets, and I hear the change, and then I was like, oh shit, but like I was like verping up Heineken like actively during
we
that
we did
ride.
Not actually puke, thank God. But it was touch and go. It was a dicey situation that we found ourselves in.
That was really fun. Yeah, we went on that twice. The second time was after we were
because we wanted to maybe just enjoy it.
Yeah, and not just be horribly trying not to puke.
Yeah.
That was really fun. Then we ate chicken and we had a giant donut.
Yeah.
And then we got an extra giant donut and took it to TEP.
And we had more beers, but we did the studio tours a lot more mellow. So we did do, I've done those rides, and I would probably do most of those again, but something about a roller coaster, man, it's scary.
But I don't want my brain bashed about on the thing. See, that's what I worry about is like a neck injury. Like I think of like riding the Beast in King's Island as a kid, and it was the world's largest wooden roller coaster, and that thing like jerked you around. I remember afterwards, like even as a youth, being like, my spine hurts. I just don't have any interest. Anyway, there are other things. Like there was a climber stranded on a 6-inch ledge who got off track when he was climbing himself and the Sierra Madres and like had to stand there for like 12 hours while people came to rescue him just on one little ledge facing the wall. But luckily he had a rescue beacon, another thing that we're not going to do. It's crazy. Just all the fun things, all the fun things. We have now covered them, but you know, I have been excited to discuss Mudhoney because again, it's not like any Russ Meyer films aren't standouts and aren't phenomenal, but it's like at the pocket where we watched this one just sat differently than others.
You remember what I said once about how when a man feels cheated, a hate'll grow in his belly? This whole town's been cheated. Cheated by the times. They's full of hate, and they's liable to listen to anybody who'll give them something solid, something real to use that hate on. They was fixing to use it on Sidney, I'd say, till he got the preacher on his side.
Maybe I ought to just pack up and go.
Which would make Sidney as happy as a pig in a mud wallow. Besides, it wouldn't change nothing. This town's got to hate something or somebody. Like maybe Hannah.
Well, then what do we do about it?
Just sit tight for now. And pray that preacher's got a brain in his head.
Yeah, it's... Of the Russ Meyers we've covered up to this point, it's been more of the 70s, much more focused on...
The salacious.
Yeah, big tits, big exaggerated, you know, stories that are, you know, from Up and Super Vixens. And,
yeah, it's still like good guys versus bad guys, and he's still playing off of traditional stories and mysteries or alleged mysteries.
Yeah.
But... This is just a little different twist, but it's still exponential.
Well, it's darker and more serious, and it is still good and evil, but it gets all mixed up by the end to this. I mean, really, one of his most powerful scenes, the finale of Mudhoney. And so we thought it'd be really cool to... You know, we eventually basically want to cover all, you know, Russ Meyer movies. And so we thought it'd be cool to jump back and do something like this, as it's different from the other three we've done so far.
It was originally released as Rope of Flesh, and then...
Yeah, it was Rope of Flesh, and it didn't do well. So Russ Meyer went back and re-edited and did a little fine-tuning, and then released it.
Mudhoney, 1965.
Yeah, exactly. And the name, it's funny, Terry, you had asked if Mudhoney was, what was that term? Because obviously people think of the band when you say Mudhoney right away, which is obviously they named it after the movie. But it seems to have been first coined by Lord Alfred Tennyson.
And oh, no way.
It was just something to describe like something, you know, sweet, but also tainted with darkness. And I think that...
Wow.
I think that's a perfect way to...
Russ Meyer would fucking put Tennyson in there.
Well, again, we talk about that, just old movies like this where they could be in this, you know, quote-unquote exploitation or, you know, B-movie, midnight movie, etc. But the people making these movies, like, actually, like, learned stuff in school, whereas, you know, now I think that's just out the window.
Yeah,
and then Russ taking his so much of his inspiration from the photographic and film work he did in the Army, which he said was like some of his favorite times of his life.
Yeah,
taking that inspiration and taking it into the movies, it is. I mean, you can see it—the positioning of the cameras, the quick cuts, all that stuff. It's still here in as early as Mudhoney.
Yeah, Mudhoney zips and. His understanding of angles is so clear. Like truly, I love how the ladies, he knows if you catch from a low angle, like it really does a favor for the chest, let's say. So you really have him, you know, working such amazing camera angles, but the quick cuts, the fastness, like this zips by.
Oh,
again,
definitely.
Never a boring moment. And Mike, when you're talking about, like, you know, when people were actually educated, like, I often reflect upon how much we have forgotten, like how much I used to know. You know what I mean? Like when I was actively, like, involved in, especially like Greco-Roman history and like other classics, and it really is amazing how much like your quad muscle or your glutes, when you don't use it for, let's say, a month and a half, it disappears completely. Apparently, if you don't use any of that knowledge for not very long, it just flies.
Well,
out
you just
of your
have
brain.
To keep you just keep reminding yourself, and because you know, there's so much stuff that is in our brains that sometimes, yeah, it's maybe not at the forefront of my brain, but then I'll just go back and reread. Say I'm thinking about a serial
reinforcing
killer.
Reinforcing it helps, yeah.
I'll go back and reread a book, or and it'll remind, oh yeah, that's right. You know, it's always there. But yeah, like you said, just like a muscle, you do have to exercise it. You have to lift. And if you don't, then yeah, you will just,
you know,
rot.
Exercise critical thinking, then you lose capacity 100%. To even get more knowledge.
100%. I mean, even watching movies. So I always say, like, if you've, whatever your opinion on a movie was 20 years prior, you almost have to, it almost like doesn't count anymore, because it's like you're so different. You come at things differently. You've experienced so much different stuff that I'm always like, I'm always need the rewatch to be like, what, did I like that movie still or not? Like, there's so many things you're like, oh yeah, I love that. And I like the joke I always make, like, well, we haven't watched that for, you know, 25 years. And you're like, so do we still like it? You know,
anyone who's new here, Mike and I have been together since the year 2000. So frequently he will remind me, if we didn't see it together, that it's been far too long since my original viewing for me to have a valid opinion.
Or whatever. I mean, you can, hey, you know what? You can have any opinion you want.
That's right.
Tara.
That's the glory of having an opinion. I can even have opinions on things I haven't seen. But love the freedom of the mind.
But I always say it's just good to go back to rewatch something because it's been. So do I have a fly in my hair?
No, your hair is sticking out like straight on the side, and it was distracting me a little. I'm sorry. It was very. Yeah, it's good. You're good now. I don't want to make you paranoid about it.
There was someone from.
Now it's even
someone from. Oh my God. Someone obviously was sitting behind us at the Tina Krause at the Limbo screening, took a picture, not during the movie, during the Q&A, during the picture of the screen.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's the back of my head. And so it's shocking to see the back of yourself.
It looked nice though.
Yeah, but it just is weird because I don't. Mm-hmm. You're just
you
like,
don't
oh,
see
that's
the back
me.
Of your own head much.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, that's my favorite part of my head is the back of my head. That's the most relaxing part to look at. So again, speaking of the way, like that the end of this film, I think that we'll start off by using his quote at the end, because I think it really deepens the understanding and the feeling of this, and that is, one man's evil can become the curse of all. And it's a Cyrus quote, what? Publius Cyrus.
But I love that you said that you're like, it's so funny how one person can just ruin everybody's.
Yes.
Like,
and so we're watching this again, and before that quote comes up, I was just thinking about how, like, you know, this film brings up that age-old dilemma, because one person can make everyone's life hell.
Yes.
Like everyone around
everyone
them.
Everyone they touch, misery.
Everyone they touch, every person they interact with, and the way then that person interacts with other people affects things, and their destruction can cause destruction on a micro and a macrocosm, and it can change the feel and mood of a group of people where maybe everybody feels hopeful and happy, and then one thing will happen and they feel dark and scared and fearful. So it brings up a lot of those like moral reflections with, like, how do we treat those people? You know what I mean? Like, what is the rightful effect for the cause that they enacted? You know, like, what do we, you know, allow absolute freedom and have this person like run amok in others' lives? Or does their freedom only extend to the extent that they are inflicting themselves upon everyone else to a larger degree and thusly becoming unfair? Like, and I think that this film really effectively raises all those questions and brings it up to an absolute fever pitch. Because in the beginning, you're like, whatever, we can tolerate this person. And then as it goes on, you feel yourself becoming less and less tolerant of Sydney.
This exactly. I was going to say, this person being the character of Sydney Brinshaw, and one of the great villains. And like you said, the way this movie plays out, the build of it, and just what it brings up is truly, like you said, just it's something that is. It's hard to come up with an answer. There's not necessarily an answer given in this movie, but
one, and that's what makes it so powerful.
One person can ruin a group of people's lives,
irreparably.
You bet, now, Tara. Tara, why don't you give us...
Well, so first of all, like, Hal Hopper plays Sidney Brinshaw, and his performance in this, like, he is a heel of heels. He is mean drunk, and he is mean when he's sober. He is, like, the... Would you imagine, like, the worst case scenario for a spouse?
I mean, he stressed me out in this way of this real way of people who you're always on edge and you're always worried that they're going to explode, even when they're
going to turn
trying to. Oh, I'm just kidding with you. And you're just like, oh.
They're trying to ask you for something and you're still like waiting for the other shoe
either,
drop,
or they're
going to
be like nice to you for 1 minute and then they show their true colors immediately. Even though you know the whole time what their true colors are, you're treating them like, you know, you just don't want them to lash out. So you're just trying everything you can to just sit on your hands, hold your mouth, hold your breath, just ride it out. Try not to show that you're
anxious, know, around them.
But it's almost impossible not to, because, I mean, we literally, when Caliph meets him, our main character, he's got a razor to his throat.
Yeah.
Sidney does. So and he's just like, I just want to kind of see what kind of man you are, you know, and he's just like, fuck,
it's
dude.
So well written, but, like, what I think is stunning on rewatch too is just like the performance of that character is so convincing. Like, you hate him, you know what I mean? Like, you're already just like feeling anxiety. He's insufferable, but the performance is phenomenal. The writing is phenomenal, but like, just that performance is really, really, you know, takes everything over the top. Like, I think he's one of the most, like, villainous characters that I can think of in a film.
No,
you know,
question.
What I mean? Like, he's fantastic. But,
well, Tara, I won't interrupt you.
Now.
I was going to say, I won't interrupt again. Tara, can you give us your classic Tara summary of Mudhoney?
Mudhoney takes place in a very small town in Missouri. Small farmers during the Depression, during the end of Prohibition, and it takes you through the life of a woman and her uncle who live together in their farmhouse, Hannah, and Uncle Lute with a T.
Oh, is it Lute?
Lute.
You know
what?
It's funny. I guess I never
I know.
Even
I thought it was
that.
Luke at first, too, but it's Lute. Uncle Lute Wade and Hannah, and she's helping her uncle out because he is getting on in years and he has a heart condition, but unfortunately she has a scumbag for a husband and his name is Sidney Brinshaw. Sidney has recently returned from Kansas City where he was working, but he couldn't make it in the big city, so he came back to terrorize his family. His favorite pastime is going to his neighbor's house where the ladies kind of turn tricks for a dollar, hang out, have fun, make hooch, and really just act like a, you know, a good-natured bunch. Seems like a place I'd like to hang out.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I love
UE
this place.
Supports that house.
Yeah, Maggie Marie's place of homemade liquor and dancing ladies. So, but he also likes to terrorize them, too. And once he's good and liquored up on hooch, he likes to come back and abuse his wife because he gets no work done. And because the uncle is ailing, they need to hire a hand. And thankfully, Caliph comes through and he's on his way to California. What's later revealed is that he's just been recently released from prison for accidentally killing a man who was doing what is that called? Line breaking?
Strike breaker. Yeah, yeah.
So for an involuntary manslaughter, and he's been released and he's making his way to California. And so he stays on through the end of harvest to be the hired hand, but he notices how horrible Sidney is, but he also understands how wonderful Hannah is, and he falls in love with her and wants to take her away, but they are in a shocking predicament because they're still stuck with Sidney, and Lute is ailing, and even though Hannah will inherit the farm, Sidney would promptly sell it, take it away, and leave her with nothing. What are they to do? In the meantime, Sidney's getting arrested and somehow invokes the sympathy of a preacher man who is also, he would be the next in line in terms of flat out heels, old brother Hansen.
Yeah.
The horrible Satan invoking brother who loves anyone who kisses his ass, and Sydney's not above kissing ass to get what he wants. And so they team up to spread rumors about the poor Wade, Loot Wade, and his Hannah and Caliph, and they whip the poor townspeople into a frenzy to the point where they're ready to condemn them to hell or run them out of town, as they say. And then we reach the fever pitch of this film. I mean, that's kind of what happened.
I mean, you nailed
it. It's an overview.
I mean, look, I'm always impressed by your summaries. I think
Oh my God, thank you so much.
The uncle being played by Stuart Lancaster, who's one of my favorite of the Russ Meyer regulars.
He's fantastic.
He's, you know, narrator slash chorus of Beneath the Valley of the Ultra Victions and the villain of Faster Pussycat Kill Kill. Here he plays a great guy, you know, kind of similar in Ultra Victions. He's also a good guy,
but
I just love his voice.
I love his voice and his cadence.
Yeah,
but you know what, in Faster Pussycat he does seem like a shitty guy. He plays a great bad guy. I mean, but then he can flip it. You know, he can do face and he can do heel.
Yeah.
He can be a great wrestler, you know what
I mean? No, totally.
But I love the look of his face, and he just seems like the sweetest, most caring, gentle man in this film. But, you know, the things, like, I enjoy about Russ Meyer is that he really nails that, like, the good guys are really good. They may be in questionable situations, but they're always likable. And you're always rooting for them, you know, even though they wouldn't maybe be the type of person you root for otherwise. And the bad guys are just pieces of shit. You know what I mean? Like, Sydney is like the worst person you can imagine. Brother Hansen is the worst possible, like, dirtbag, scamming, inciting preacher that you can imagine. But Hannah is just like such like a sweetheart who still tries to like redeem and love her husband, even though he like is a horrible person and beats the shit out of her. She just still is like, he was a good man. He wasn't always like this. Like,
yeah.
All of these people, like Caliph, who's just being steadfast and trying to be measured. Like, all of these people are just so like exemplifying these kind of like character archetypes that are so good.
Well, and of course you have Eula, who is almost the archetype of pure innocence.
Absolutely.
Where she can't hear, she can't talk, she's deaf and mute, and she's always just kind of petting a cat. She's just so sweet.
And she loves every man that she has ever seen.
Yes.
So Maggie Marie's house, I mean, like, we can go into it more. So, like, the characters, like, it is... But I do feel that, like, because that happens in Russ Meyer films, like, you get strong feelings about people.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? Like, he invokes those, like, strong feelings. So at Maggie Marie's, she has two daughters. She has Clarabelle and Eula. So Clarabelle likes to dance. She's beautiful. She's blonde. She has, like, a, you know, sparkling character. She calls... Caliph Honeyman. Hey, Honeyman, what are you doing over here? As soon as she meet him, she likes to romp around with their ranch hand called Enjoys. But then there's Eula, who is equally beautiful, but she can't hear and she can't speak. But everyone she sees, she flashes them like a beautiful smile, and she hugs them and bats her eyes at them and wants to go to bed with them immediately. And it's like this unconditional love response out of somebody. And it's really just an unusual character, and it does insert that like strangeness into the film.
Yeah, and Clarabelle is played by Lorna Matland, who of the movie Lorna, and then Eula is played by Russ Meyer was enjoying off screen, and even though
whilst
he was still with
was
Eve,
married, yes,
yeah, and so he changed her name.
People you like, but they're also complicated, you know.
I mean, look, changed her name in the screenplay and everything to Rena, her you know what her actress name was, and then it wasn't till the movie was done and in the can that Eve found out that it was the girl that Russ had been banging.
Eve
so
being
he's like,
Russ's
eh.
wife.
He's like, eh, that wasn't my best moment.
No. But,
you know, what are you going to do?
She was gorgeous, though. And she also didn't speak because she was German.
Yes, she was
German
so they had her be mute because, you know, in this small town, Spooner, Missouri, it really wouldn't make much sense. So that's partly why they had her mute. But I think it really works for the movie and for the character.
And it just, it fits in this kind of like Dust Bowl Depression era vibe.
Definitely.
Everything. But yes, I love the Maggie Marie's. And Maggie Marie's like, I haven't turned a trick in 15 years or whatever, 20 years. But like, I love her toothlessness.
Yeah.
I love her enthusiasm. Princess Livingston, I think she's in other things too. She's fantastic. Like, she has an infectious laugh. She's very, despite her age, her toothlessness, always wearing a giant, a loose dress and Converse sneakers. She has a zest for life and corn liquor that you gotta respect.
And just,
you know,
she's
what I mean?
Just so down with her daughters being prostitutes. You know, that's cool too.
She's, or whatever they need to survive, though. That's how.
Oh yes,
you know,
dancer.
I mean, that's how they're
just,
making.
They're just
they're dancers,
just dancing.
And that's how they are making. They're living, Mike. So who are we to judge? They seem to be getting by. They seem to be happy in life, except when, you know, they seem to be even fine when Sydney's there.
That's the thing is they and I think one of the realistic things about this movie is how people, especially who have lived and known Sydney for a long time, it's not this just that you hate. They don't just hate him. Even his wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the uncle obviously does, but most people, and that is how life is. There's people like that in your life, where you know they're not the best people in the world, but then you remember maybe a time when they weren't, or you see those glimpses of when they're okay, and like, that is the complicated thing of people like this, where it's like, okay, we've known him for a long time. Yeah, when he gets drunk, he gets ornery, but you know, he's great before he gets drunk, and not always, you know. So it's like,
and then maybe he's escalated it so much that then they're just kind of sad about it, like, man, he's going crazy.
Yeah,
this is sad, and it's not necessarily seeing the danger.
Like, they don't necessarily love him, but they also make fun of him too, and they clown on him when he's too drunk. So it's like they also have power. It's not just like Hannah, the wife, who basically just gets beaten.
And raped.
She has no power, whereas the girls at Maggie's do have a power, and so that they are able to deal with him in a different way.
Yes, where Hannah has no one to protect her and doesn't have the upper hand
until our boy Caliph comes along.
Right. But then I did like the quote, like Uncle Lute, you know, explaining like why Hannah is so tolerant of Sydney, and he said, the trouble with women is that they like to see things the way they like to see things, not the way it is. And you know what? I don't think that's like the trouble with women, but I think that's how we are as human beings sometimes.
I do think that can be very true.
Yeah. We see things the way we see things, not the way necessarily they are. And like, you know, maybe that's our problem as humans. We're not omnipotent. So I love that. But truly, like, the scenes of at Maggie Marie's, when we have Clarabelle dancing to the record player, they are like, she is very like sexy, you know, like when she's skinny dipping out in the watering hole.
Oh no, she's,
and
so
she's
hot.
Dancing she, to the
she
record
is,
player.
I say you do have to sort of, you know, it is a Russ Meyer movie. I would say she's probably she's the hottest to me, I would say. I mean, they're all great, but I would say I actually really like the preacher's either daughter or sister.
Or whoever that is, I don't know.
It's a daughter. I think it's daughter.
Yeah.
I think it is daughter.
I thought it was sister, but...
Oh, maybe it is. Something. Well, either way.
I don't know. Who can tell?
But I like, you know, I like the brunette.
Doesn't
you
matter.
Know? I thought she's really hot.
I think everybody is amazing. And, you know, I can just enjoy them each on their own terms.
Okay, Tara, I'm just...
That's fine.
I'm just trying to say.
Can I have a face? Oh, my God. Funny. All right.
Made me go Sydney on you.
Oh my God. I just, you know, for just in case everybody knows, like, Mike has never
you just want to
Mike doesn't
like
it's
know.
Not
oh,
a
okay.
thing we do. It's not even like a thing we're into, like, in terms of a kink. Now we did once take a boxing class. And I love bringing it up because it's really, really funny. Fun story. You know, we only have limited bits. So we had been boxing.
I'm sure we told this.
Oh, I don't think we've told it on here. We had been boxing for like a couple months and like we were exercising and like going to a boxing gym. And I had like been like shadow boxing this like 16-year-old boy who said that I had no rhythm and was making fun of me. I was very bad at it. It's okay. And so like we got home and we were like, you know, shadow boxing like together. And then Mike like made contact with my eyebrow. Like it was a tap and it didn't hurt. But the thing is, like if you hit your brow bone, you know, it will blacken your eye. Like it's just like there's a certain way that you get hit on your eye and you know you're going to get a black eye, right? And it was so I just started laughing and I was like, oh my God, you just gave me a black eye. He was like, no, no. And you felt so bad.
Yeah.
Like your face was you were like, no, no. Yeah. What am I going to do? And you looked like you were panicking.
Yeah,
I felt
yeah, yeah.
So bad. But then. Yeah.
But hey, but now that this is true.
It is really funny.
And but then, you were able to do your makeup so that.
Well, yeah, I just added purple to my other eye, oh my so it God. Looked like I had a lot of purple
now,
eyeshadow on it. But
so you say that it's not something we do, but, you know, there has been nights where we have wrestling chopped each other.
Oh, I mean, but we like wrestling.
And
I mean,
that
that's wrestling.
Has left, you have left
yeah,
wild did. Marks on
well,
my chest.
You know, maybe we were watching like that Dragunov and match, you
yeah,
know
with,
what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, with Gunther.
With Gunther. And maybe we were like,
let's see if we could do
that. Feel like I don't know, like yeah,
it hurts. By the way,
it hurts. Yeah, I mean, you got some welts. You know, but it's not like a. There's never.
I got it, listener. I think the listeners are.
I don't
want to
make it sound like we're into some like you know like locking each other into boxes and kink.
I'm not gonna go Sydney Brinshaw on Tara so that everybody. I'm making that official statement now, and I apologize for everything I've done.
I assure you, listener, he would never do that. But he would never go Sydney Brinshaw. No one can. Can you imagine? Have you ever known? I mean. But it's I feel like I've known people that
kind
have
of,
the energy.
Yeah, have the energy, definitely.
Because his energy is like immediately, so like when his character
I would
Caleb
say definitely.
Comes to town and he goes to shave for the first time, like Mike was referencing earlier, like Caliph is shaving with a straight razor and Sydney takes the razor out and is like holding it up to his throat. You know what I mean? Like he's immediately like just threatening to kill him, you know, like right off the bat. But you know the thing I think also in this is that he stands so close
yes
when he's talking like he just stands so close and he's so sweaty that like there's
and
just,
drunk
and
that's an important
so
point
drunk.
I don't know if we've actually pointed this out
yeah,
which is a super important
hooch.
Part
yeah
is that he's completely annihilated most of the time mm-hmm. So it makes it scarier because he's just so on edge that you know he's completely blind drunk. So how do you deal with someone like that? Because you don't want to agitate him, but you don't want to say
yes.
One wrong word and then they just go off. So like you said, Tara, obviously this is a movie and obviously Sydney is an exaggerated character, but definitely I can't think of a specific person offhand, but I've been in situations where this energy definitely
yes
is present in somebody
and you know
and
it could go
like,
either way and you're like fuck
especially like, you know old school touring backstage
oh
some
yeah
weirdo and you know what I mean stuff yeah. Like that where you're like oh just get this guy out of here
yes
like, you know
so
what I mean
punishing.
It's scary yeah it's like Punisher to the degree that like something might go down
yeah.
And you're just like I don't want this to go
yes.
down
yes like
yeah.
Or like when you're in a place and you know somebody's gonna get kicked out and you're just like not
yeah.
loving it. And
yeah.
It also reminds me of like, I started this, we say this all the time because it was so funny when it happened. I had started a new job in Ann Arbor and, I was working like, you know, until like 3 o'clock and it's like, I had literally worked there less than a week and I'm going to like clock out at the time clock. And this guy that I had just worked with and I didn't really know him just said, oh, you think you're hot shit? Cause you get to leave early. Just like walked up to me as I'm clocking in at the time clock and said, you think you're hot shit. And it's just like that is Sydney's energy to every
yeah.
other person in the world.
Like unsolicited and also totally unwarranted.
Yes. Yes. So like for me, it was so funny because I'm like, I don't know this person. I don't know if I was projecting that I think I'm hot shit because I get to work
yeah.
an 8-hour shift and then leave. But just somebody like that you don't know being like, oh, you think you're hot shit.
Well, even the way
he's
introduced to Calif, because yeah. like Hannah and the uncle hire him.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, oh, what do you think? Like,
you think you work for them? You work for me, boy.
But it's like, yeah, I do. Yeah. This is how I'm meeting you, with a razor to my throat.
Yes. No, 100%. And it's like that. It's just that energy of somebody who may be insecure about their lack of power or not, but they're just looking to like punish everybody in their presence and to do it often. And that is Sydney. And that's why he's so amazing. But, and I think that also the depression era of this place.
Yeah.
Like, we have old trucks. Like, none of the farmhouses are nice. We're going down like dirt roads.
Dusty, dirty.
Yeah.
And it is based on a book, Streets Paved with Gold. Mm-hmm. So there is, you know, about depression era in the 30s. So yeah, that the fact that that's the setting just adds to the bleakness of the story.
Yes, but I mean, truly, like the writing is also so good. Like after Calif defends Hannah, and then Sydney's like, "You come busting into her room like some batty rooster. You come sniffing around after her. She needs a real man like me, not some gutless boy."
Yeah, it's,
you know,
so
it's just
great.
Like, oh my god, because again, like, he thinks being a real man is like beating his wife and like sexually assaulting her on her bedroom floor in front of her uncle. Like, it's really dark. Really, really dark. And even the fact that, like, you know, the uncle's working so hard to leave something for Hannah so that she can be provided for in life. And then Sydney's doing everything he can to take it away from her. And then the uncle sneaks off and puts the farm in Caliph's name so that Sydney will never get a part of it, because he knows that Caliph's a straight up man and he'll help Hannah out, and that Sydney never would. And so then that just adds to like the frenzied nature of Sydney until he finally really, really, really gets so high in his own supply because he has his enlisted, the preacher.
That's right. So Reverend Hansen, Brother Hansen, comes on the scene after Sydney's been in jail for fighting somebody. He gets let out. Then he beats up Caliph again. He even does, like you said, the heel thing of throwing the dust in the face.
Oh, my God.
You know? And so the Reverend, and then so this is sort of the second, you know, the turn in the movie, mm-hmm. is when Sydney really, you know, befriends the Reverend and for his own gains to basically turn the entire town against,
and just say that they're turning against him and they're having an affair and it's just the devil's house and have the preacher like preach against. Yeah.
And the quote we played before the discussion of this is this great point where Stuart Lancaster is discussing the town turning and about how, you know, maybe this town needs to hate. It needs something to hate. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Tara, it's this one person, two people really, but, you know, the Reverend and Sydney just turning this, you know, putting the hate. It's like this town needs something to hate
it, yeah.
And they're focusing it on the farm. And it's this really, and it's such an incredible monologue because it is so true. And it's, you see it in so many different aspects in life. And
people that feel cheated,
yeah.
And it's not necessarily they're focusing their hate on something because they feel cheated, and it's not necessarily the proper place or the source of what happened, but they need something to
if
lash
you're
out
persuaded
at. Yes.
And easily persuaded, then you will be turned towards that.
And I'm
way.
Sure we've all been there before, you know, because it's just like just having even that time period of just everybody feeling like a general sense of like, this isn't fair. You know, this isn't fair that we're living
everyone's
through this.
Everyone's down. Area. Everyone's out. Everyone's
no
out
one
of
has
work.
Any money. Everybody's suffering. Like, it's just, who can we blame for it?
Yeah.
Essentially.
And so they're able to focus the town's hate on the farm.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think it's really, really powerful. And then, you know, as Sydney feels like, and again, like the classic heel, like as soon as he gets any degree of power, he's going to abuse it. Just like, you know, he alludes to having men working for him in Kansas City. It's like, you know, as soon as he had men working for him, he abused his power. And that's probably why he got run out of Kansas City. And so as soon as like things start going his way and he feels like something's going to happen, he has to get wasted and go crazy. So when he finds out that Lute has passed and he's not going to get the farm, he goes and he burns it down.
Well, even before that is actually, I think, so what the final section of what it all kicks off is, yes, is Lute has passed away and they're at the funeral, and even Callus, like,
oh, yeah,
why are there
right.
so few people
Sorry.
At the funeral? Like, he definitely had more friends in this.
Yes.
And they're like, yeah, basically the preacher and Sidney have turned the entire town on him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, now everyone's against him. And so Sidney comes all drunk and is all, you know, going insane, and then ends up knocking into the casket. And then, they're fighting at the funeral.
He says, I'm going to tear the living guts out of you at the funeral.
And then he falls into
open
grave, and then Lute falls on top of him, and it's just this really dark, heavy scene. And then Sidney just freaks out, runs away, and even Caliph's like, somebody better catch him because he is not right and something's going to happen. And this is when the final,
And it's the first time that Caliph fought back because,
Right, he doesn't fight back.
He had had a conversation with Lute, and he's like, I don't want to kill him. I don't want to engage in the violence. And Lute's like, I can see your concern is that you're worried that you're going to have to kill him. And that you're going to have to fight him. And so Lute kind of like confirms like, yeah, you're probably going to have to confront him. And you're going to have to stand up to him. So at his funeral, that's when Caliph stands up. For real, shows his power to Sidney. Sidney falls in the grave and then has to immediately, because he was, publicly disgraced in his fighting prowess, has to go take revenge. And so his revenge is burning down the farm.
He burns down the farm, and then he goes to the preacher's house and he gets the preacher's daughter and brings her out, and they're going to go, looking and
look for the preacher so he can be redeemed.
He starts drinking.
And he automatically says, Caliph burned down the farm.
Yeah.
I know he did it, so I wouldn't get it.
And so he starts drinking, and she's like, what are you doing? You're not supposed to do that. And then he just flies into a total rage, pours alcohol down her throat, and starts calling her Hannah. And then it just goes completely just dark. And when she's screaming, he does that thing where he screams.
Ugh.
And that, to me, is one of the, just something about that, the grandpa does it in Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yes.
The thing where they like kind of scream and laugh in your face, and it just is like, you're done. There's nowhere you can
just
go.
Just mocking,
now.
mocking your fear,
yeah.
Like the complete lack of sympathy,
and then just drowns her in a creek, and it is so visceral and violent, and just
rips her clothes off.
It's insane. Yeah.
And then when they find out that he did it, because they all do. Then a lynch mob gathers together to hang Sidney, and then it's left with the good sheriff, with Hannah, with Caliph, trying to decide what to do. And there was a point where they could have just left, where Caliph and Hannah could just leave and let the townspeople do what they will. And they had this point, and they decide not to, because they think a shadow will be following them forever, and they want to do what's right. But it is that thing where it would be so much less. It would have been better off for them in the end had they just left, because it's that like no good deed goes unpunished type of situation where they were trying to do the right thing. They were trying not to run out on things. They were trying to be noble. But Sidney had already dug his own grave. You can't save somebody who's already forcing themselves in.
Yeah. So this fever pitch ending, they're in the town, and some people want to hang them. Some people are saying, don't do it.
Let justice take its hand. Let the law do what it's supposed to
and
do.
And it's just so chaotic, and everyone's in this fever pitch of this, it's not even a discussion, everyone's yelling and doing this, and the noose is hung, and they're got Sidney up ready to go, and the preacher comes, and it's this totally chaotic thing where it's just like, yeah, that is sort of what goes on in your mind when you're deciding, do I want this person killed? Do I want this person,
what is the right thing to do? Is the right thing to let the lynch mob take him? Is it to protect him so that there's justice? But it's like, I guess, like, even thinking about it, it's like they are trying to redeem somebody who's unredeemable.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that everybody's unredeemable. I'm saying that, like, the way that Sidney is portrayed is somebody who is unredeemable.
But then at the same time,
but that makes it so much more beautiful because they're sacrificing themselves for somebody who doesn't deserve it.
And then our instinct is always to go against the mob. We hate the mob.
Yeah.
We hate groups of like that, you know? So it's like my instinct is hating the mob, but at the same time, I'd be fine with Sidney dying. You know, and again, it doesn't give you there's no answer. No. I mean, it leaves. And again, someone like Sidney, like, yeah, I'm fine with him like dying, but I don't like the mob.
Yeah.
You know,
and I don't like people killing people.
But.
But Sidney killed someone. Preacher's saying an eye for an eye. So it's like there's all these like moral quandaries that are raised. And it's not like we're looking at it from like our perspective, but you put yourself in the perspective of these people, right? It's the perspective of this town that doesn't have the internet, that doesn't have the phone, that doesn't have outside help. Like, and then you see kind of how they could reach this stage, you know? And it's,
yeah,
and I
definitely.
Think it's really one of those like, interesting films just in it stays with you a while.
No,
because
absolutely.
You think like, what would I do in that situation?
Absolutely.
Because it is like one of those things, like sometimes, you know, maybe we all see something and we're like, that story's cut and dry. I buy two bananas. I don't like this. You know what I mean? Like, and then you just see it so clearly, but this is something that you can like, it just seems so muddy and you hate to see nice people like wasting their life for somebody, but you see the beauty of people who are willing to stand up for another person's life even though they only suffer for it, and that, but that's kind of where their goodness and their beauty lies, you know. And then even Eula coming out, who has a beautiful smile for everybody, loves everybody, can't hear them and can't talk about it, but then, you know, she comes out to see the scene and just and weeps for everybody, you know, at this point. You know, so there is like the purity of thought in it, but there's also the desolation, the sadness, the hopelessness that's carried through.
Yeah, and just the standing up to the mob. One of the everyone again, so many. You think you're gonna be the one who does it, and then when it comes down to it, you don't.
Yeah,
you know, because it's. Again, yeah, I think it's one of the most powerful Russ Meyer movies, and I think it talks about so much stuff that you can bring with you. And again, this is one where every handful of years you revisit, you'll have a different take on this and how to go. And I think that's what makes a great movie. And I think Mudhoney is truly a great movie that, you know, Russ has these different eras. And so much of our love of Russ Meyer comes from that final era, you know, of Super Vixens and Up, and that's when we think of Russ Meyer. That is definitely
salacious,
what we think
fun.
Of. But you have to remember the different eras and stuff like Mudhoney and Motorpsycho came in a very different way, and even Faster Pussycat, very different. And so
there's a pain in Faster Pussycat, you know.
Yeah, so he's just, you know, truly one of the all time greats. Obviously, if you've listened to us for any amount of episodes, you know this is our fourth Russ Meyer episode. Actually, it's definitely the most of any director we've done so far. You know, I think we've only done like we've done two or three Jess Francos, and actually we were kind of planning on doing more Jean Reno, and I think we do need to get back into some Jean Reno because we were kind of saying like that
it's like a fall thing, man.
It is coming up.
Yeah.
So I thought about that too. So I think we're definitely getting some more Jean Reno in the fall. But man, I'm really glad Tara. And this was you. This was a Tara. She said, you know, we had recently popped it on, and Tara, because we recently picked up the DVD at the Counterpoint sale, and Tara's like, you know what? Let's watch it again and do that. And it was a good follow-up for talking a little bit about Russ with Richard. So I am glad, Tara.
Yeah, it embodies like pain and frustration. And I think that's something that I don't think it's just us having a lot of it.
No,
this
of course.
Summer.
Of
you
course,
know what I mean? I think
course.
It's...
But there's been a lot of that going on this summer for a lot of people. And
we've had a lot
of... It's just been our experience. You know, that we can speak to and relate to. But
there's
We're not the only people.
Yeah.
Obviously. And so this was a perfect way to cap off the end of summer suffering. Tara, really enjoyed talking with you about Mudhoney.
You too, Mike.
Well, not sure what we'll be coming at next week, but one thing we'll be sure of is we will be at Whammy on Wednesday at 7:30. Screening probably will start at 8:00. You know, intro and screening starts at 8:00. And we'll be at Mermaid in like a few hours. So if you are
I better go
inclined,
get cute.
Tara. You already
put some work in.
Not that much, though, Tara.
Or we could just like do some wrestling chops. Turn each other into burger meat.
Do it. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for the support. We will talk to you next time.